Before we kind of jump into the main points, I just want to say right at the beginning, I know that when we talk about creation, right, there can be, it can be kind of be surrounded by a lot of controversy, right, about maybe the Earth's age or about evolution or about Neanderthals or whatever it can be. I know this topic can really be surrounded by those controversial issues. And what I really hope to do today is to kind of to miss all those. I think if we focus on those, we really kind of miss the beauty and we kind of miss the main points of the doctrine of creation. I think we can get kind of caught up, and those things are important, but I think we can get caught up in kind of those periphery things as opposed to focusing, I think, on what the beauty and the glory of the doctrine of creation can teach us. So I do have an opinion on a lot of those things. There's a book up here, Genesis Unbound by John Salehammer. Highly recommend it. It's a really good book that kind of walks through Genesis and has, it kind of addresses some of those periphery things. So if you're a reader and you like that, you can read it. Just a little side note here. This book also happens to be one that John Piper says that it's kind of where he stands. So I'm not crazy, right? John Piper likes it. It's got to be pretty good. But it's a really good book. So, but anyways, all to say, so we're not going to dive into those things today. I think that they just distract. But I do want to say, I think that if we could recognize Genesis 1 and 2 as being historical, right? They're historical books, but they're not scientific. And if we could recognize them as being both literal and poetic, right? I think sometimes we get caught up in, or people can get caught up and say, well, they're literal, so there's no imagery. Well, I don't think that's quite right. Or we can say, well, they're really poetic, so there's nothing literal about them. Well, that's not true either. I think we got to recognize it's kind of both those. And I'm just going to say a couple things right here at the beginning that we're not going to dive into, but I want to just lay them out there so that you guys know I'm not a heretic. And I want to say these things that I hope, kind of regardless of where we land on maybe all these other issues, I think these three are three that we need to agree on, and then we're going to look at some other points. So the first thing that I think we have to agree on that isn't periphery, that I'd say is pretty central, and actually we are going to talk about this a little more today, and that's the fact that God created everything out of nothing, right? So I'm not going to say anything about that because we'll come back to that. But then the second thing that I want to just say in the intro is that I think we need to recognize that Adam and Eve were real, historical, literal men and women. I think sometimes people try to take that away, and I think we have to recognize that Adam and Eve were real and they were historical. Both Jesus and Peter, right, in the New Testament reference Adam when they're making some pretty important theological statements. And so if we take out a historical, literal Adam, then I think we get into pretty shaky waters. And then the third thing that I think I hope we can all agree on in the beginning here is that God created Adam and Eve as male and female by design. And then he linked that with the power and authority to create new life. And I think especially in today's world, we need to recognize that, right? God created them as man and woman intentionally and by design, and that was good. So those are just three things that we're not going to spend a ton of time on those, but I want to just say those. So if you're thinking like, man, maybe Mike is crazy. What does he think? No, these are things I think we need to agree that are true. And the reality with this, right, with the doctrine of creation, there's probably 20 points that we could talk about, right? We could talk about 20 different aspects of creation and what it teaches us about God or about ourselves. We don't have time for that. So I picked four out. For those of you that have been part of the series, right, we're doing the importance of doctrine. It's kind of been set up where the teacher does the doctrine 1 week and then the application the next week. I'm kind of bucking that trend. If any of you know me, I don't like to stay in line. I got to be a little different. So I'm doing 2 points today, 2 applications today, and then we're going to look at 2 points and 2 applications next week. Just as I was preparing, I was like, man, as I'm talking about the point, I want to apply it. Don't want to wait till next week. So we're going to look at 4 points total. Like I said, there could be 20. I just picked out 4 that I think are important. So we're looking at 2 points today and 2 applications, and then 2 points next week and 2 applications. All right, so buckle up. We ready? Eric was joking that he was going to bring like a belt, and when I said that, he was going to click it. But we didn't do that. So anyways, the first point is what I already said, right? God created everything out of nothing. A lot of what I'm going to say for this point, if you've been here the last couple weeks, it might sound similar to what Dr. Hines talked about when he was talking about the doctrine of God and God being kind of self-sufficient. Or if you were here the last couple weeks when my dad was teaching on God's sovereignty, it might sound similar to that. I'm going to repeat some of the things. I'm fine doing that. I'm okay repeating. The reason I'm okay, right, there's 2 reasons why I'm okay repeating. One is I think as a teacher up here, I think my job is more to remind you of what you must never forget and not to teach you something new, right? So I'm just reminding you of what Dr. Hines and what my dad already taught. And the second reason is because I think this point, I think this reality that God created everything out of nothing, I think God's sovereignty, God's self-sufficiency, I think it's absolutely critical and absolutely foundational to everything else that we're going to try to understand. If we don't understand this, and if we don't get this right, then I don't think the rest of the Bible makes sense. I don't think our life makes sense. I don't think any of the rest of the doctrines we're talking about in this series really makes sense. So I'm fine talking about it again and talking about God creating everything out of nothing. I'm fine talking about God being God and us not being him. I'm fine doing that again. So if you think maybe, hey, didn't we just hear this? Well, you did, and we're going to hear it again. And I think that's good. So we're gonna look at a couple verses today, but the first verse I want to look at, it's the first verse in the Bible, and it says this, right? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So right there, I think we see this, right? In the beginning, God. There's no explanation for God. There's no saying where God came from. He's just there. That's the assumption then and the implication that God always was, that he always is, that he always will be. I think God is the only thing in the entire universe without cause, right? Because nothing caused God. Rather, he caused everything. That's what it means to create everything out of nothing. It means that he created, that he caused everything. It means God was there before time even existed. But how does that make sense, right? He was there before. Well, how can we have before if there wasn't time? We can't really understand that, right? We can't. I think Dr. Hines said it makes your brain smoke. But I think that's the point. I think that's the point, right? We're created beings, so we're not going to be able to fully understand a creator God. So I think when we think about that, well, what does that mean that God was there before? We should be confused. We shouldn't be able to understand that. But the reality is it's true. It's real. John 1:3 says it maybe a little more explicitly. It says, all things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. God created everything out of nothing. This is incredible. Revelation 4:11 says the same thing. So as creator, right, as God who created everything out of nothing, he then gets to decide why that creation exists, right? The Westminster Shorter Catechism for kids, number 3. Some of you kids might know this, so if you know it, shout out the answer. The question goes, why did God make you and all things? Nailed it. For his own glory. That was my daughter. I don't know if that's cheating, but I know some of the other kids know it too. We actually didn't practice that, okay? We didn't practice. For his own glory, right? So why did God make you and all things? For his own glory. So I think the foundational aspect, or one of the foundational aspects of the doctrine of creation, is that God created everything out of nothing, and then because of that, he gets to decide why things exist, and he declares they exist for his glory. Now, that leads to the follow-up question, right? What is God's glory? What does that look like? What does that mean? That's a really good question. We could probably write books. There have been probably 100 books written on that. But I think for us this morning, what a helpful picture is to think of God's glory as wherever his rule and his reign is being made manifest. I stole that from Mr. Anderson. He was giving me some feedback on this, and he said, develop that a little bit. So God's glory is his rule and his reign being manifest. We could define it a lot of different ways, but I was just talking to Eric earlier this week, and I think it was Eric, yeah, and he was reading in Ezekiel 1, and it's talking about those like crazy angelic beings that have like different heads. That's a representation of God's glory too, right? So God's glory is multifaceted. But for today, what I want to focus in is that God's glory is where his rule and his reign is made manifest. So I think going back to the Garden of Eden, right, we see that. That was a perfect example before the fall, where God's rule and his reign was manifest in the Garden of Eden. Then I think Revelation gives us a picture of when that's going to happen again, right? When he ushers in a new kingdom, it is going to be his rule and his reign for eternity and perfection, and that's God's glory. And I think for us today, right, as believers, how does that work for us today? I think that we, as believers, are little pockets of God's glory, right? When we're fully surrendered to Jesus' ways and Jesus' will, then that's God's rule and reign in our lives. It's not perfect, right? It's kind of a dim, imperfect reflection because we're still sinful. But I think when we as believers, we can be little pockets, letting him rule and reign in our hearts. He can rule and reign in our families. He can rule and reign in this church. And that's demonstrations of his glory, right? And he says that's why he created us. That's why he created everything out of nothing, is for his glory. And we can manifest that. So that's point number one, right? He's got to create everything out of nothing. What does that mean for us? How does that apply? What does that mean for us today? And there's two applications I want to look at. One is that I think it should lead us to put our hands over our mouth. And then I think it should lead us to rest. So what do I mean by put our hands over our mouth, right? The end of Job is the book of Job. The last like four or five chapters are probably one of my favorite parts of the Bible. The whole book of Job is pretty confusing. There's a lot of stuff in there that's kind of weird that I don't really understand. But then I think the last four chapters kind of just puts it all into perspective and makes it really clear. And what happens, right, is God just confronts Job, and there's just two chapters of God just proclaiming his absolute reign over creation. He says, I created everything. I was there. I'm active. He's just absolutely blasting Job, basically, with his just total sovereignty over every aspect of creation, his wisdom and how he created everything, how he gives the lions their food. And it's majestic. It's incredible. And then the next verse is Job's response, and I put it up here. It's Job 40, verse 3 to 5. So this is after just two chapters of God just wrecking Job with his power in creation. And Job says, and said, Behold, I am of small account. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand on my mouth. I have spoken once, and I will not answer. Twice, but I'll proceed no further. So I think that's going to be application for us today, right? Is Job realizes how foolish it is to question God. In the face of the absolute reality that God created everything from nothing, Job's only response is to lay his hand over his mouth and to be quiet. And so for us today, right, how have we questioned God? In what areas or realms have we been defining what is good and true as opposed to letting God's word define what is good and true? Right? Have we been looking to culture to tell us what is right and what is good? Or have we been looking to God's word to tell us what is right and what is good? So I pray that we as a church would be people who are quick to lay our hand over our mouth in light of his awesome, glorious, and creative power. So that's the first application. And the second part of that is to rest, right? Rest in the reality that the God who created everything out of nothing is still active in creation today. He is still active in our world and in our lives today. He is still in total control today. Isaiah 46, 9 and 10, it says, For I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning, from ancient times, things not yet done, saying, My counsel shall stand, and I will accomplish all my purpose. I will accomplish all my purpose. That means nothing is happening today. Nothing happened yesterday. Nothing's going to happen this summer. Nothing's happening in Ukraine. Nothing's happening here in Chico that is outside of God's control, right? And that should give us incredible rest. It's easy to look around, right? We see the world descending into chaos through wars, through injustice, through environmental crisis, through greed. But I think that I know that we as a church can rest in the reality that God is still reigning supreme. And I know in a room this big, right, some of our personal worlds are descending into chaos, whether that's through a broken relationship, maybe that's through death, maybe that's through depression, maybe that's through some disappointment. I don't know all of our lives, but I know that we can rest secure in the reality that there is one who brings order to chaos, who brings light to darkness, and who brings life to death. And he is still in total control over every situation, right? That's why Isaiah just said, all of his purposes, nothing happens apart from his goodwill. And I think it's important to recognize that even when we can't see that, right? We're created. We just talked about that. Even when we can't see how it can be good, we as creatures, we can rest that even when things aren't going according to our story, God is going to make them work for his glory. And this truth has been sustaining for our family. Before, I just had Terrence pregnant with our third. Before this pregnancy, we had two miscarriages. That's hard. That's death. And I think in the midst of that, one of the things that got us through is to recognize that God is in control of that. That wasn't outside of God's control. Because that would be terrifying, right? If something else was controlling that, that's terrifying. But no, God, in his goodness and in his sovereignty, is in control of that. And I don't know how. I don't know how he is. I don't know how that's good from death. But I have to trust what his word says as opposed to what my experience tells me, right? I mean, I can testify that through the pain of those miscarriages, this promise is what we held on to, is that God is in control of everything. He's in control of those. So I pray that we as a church would rest, that we'd rest in his goodness and in his power. So that's point number one, right? God created everything from nothing. Let's be quick to put our hands over our mouth and to rest. And then point number two, second point, and then we're going to do two more next week. But so for today, and this is really kind of a, I kind of cheated here, it's really a two for one. Point number two, God's creation is very good, / we are made in God's image. And I think you're going to see why I connected these. I think they're very intertwined, and hopefully I can explain that. But that's point number two, / two and a half. God's creation is very good, and we as humans are made in God's image. So God's creation is very good, right? We see that refrain throughout Genesis 1 and 2. If you're familiar with that, at the end of every day, God says, and it was good, and it was good. And then he creates humans, and he said, and it was very good. We also see it throughout the psalm, right? The psalms are declaring how God's world and his creation is very good. And so I think what this means, right, when God declares something as good, what he's doing is he is ascribing intrinsic value to it. So something is good. If God declares something is good, that means it has value. And this is where we kind of start to overlap with us being made in God's image, right? And again, God's image is one of those topics that is huge and that we could write that there have been a million books written about. So I'm just going to kind of touch on a couple aspects of what I think it means to be made in God's image. But one of those things is that being made in God's image means we have intrinsic value, right? So that's what starts to overlap. Because God declared us as very good, we have value. And because we're made in God's image, we have value. So being in his image means every single human has intrinsic value. That means regardless of age, right, whether someone is 1 second after being conceived, or whether someone is 119 years old, that's the oldest person alive right now, which is just crazy. A little side note, that means they were born in 1903. That person's still alive. It was verified in January, so I guess maybe they could have passed away. But born in 1903, can you imagine the change that they've seen? Mind-boggling. But anyways, sorry, a little tangent there. I thought that was fascinating. I was like, I can't even... I feel like my 29 years, I've seen a lot of change in life, and that person has lived 100 years longer than me. So regardless, right, of their age, regardless of is that person 119, or regardless of a baby 1 second after conception, regardless of someone's gender, their ethnicity, their physical ability, their physical disability, regardless of their hair color, right, regardless of their fame, whether it's Tom Brady or Will Wilson, doesn't matter. They have value. And I think we see that throughout the Bible, right? In Romans 12, God talks about letting love be genuine to all. In Matthew 25, Jesus says that the least of these people matters in his kingdom. And then at the end of the Bible, right, in Revelation 5 and then in Revelation 21, John sees the end of time, and he says there's going to be people from all ages and stages worshiping God and his forever family. And so that's part of what it means to be made in God's image, is that we have intrinsic value. So you're starting to see how these are kind of connected, right? Because God declares us as good and his creation as being good, it has value. And then because we are made in his image, we have value. So that is an important part of the doctrine of creation, is that all of God's creation has innate goodness, and especially humans. And then the other aspect, I said I was going to touch on a couple things of image bearing. The other aspect of image bearing that I want to look at today, and it ties into God's creation being very good, right? So this is why I'm weaving these together. Hopefully you'll see that. Is that I think the truth that part of our image bearing is our responsibility to shepherd creation. So why do I say that, right? Well, let's look at Genesis 1, 26 to 28. This is God's like kind of proclamation of man being made in his image. He says, "Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heaven, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful, and multiply, and fill the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heaven, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." So what do you notice? That's rhetorical. I'm just going to tell you what you notice. What you should notice, right, is that God's declaration of image bearing, right in the middle there, that's sandwiched between two sets of commands, right? And the two commands are have dominion over all the earth, and then be fruitful, subdue, and have dominion. So we can't separate our image bearing from those two commands, right? Those sandwich them. This has to be tied together. Now that phrase, have dominion, it can be translated a lot of different ways. I think probably the two most helpful for us to understand is to think about it as ruling or as stewarding. The NET Bible, which if you're not familiar with that, is this translation that's pretty cool, and it has like, you can see the translator's notes of why they translated words certain ways. It's a really cool tool, NET Bible, if you're interested. And the little note they had on this verse, it says that God's purpose in giving humankind his image is that they might rule the created order on behalf of the heavenly king. So ruling on behalf of the heavenly king. Well, ruling on behalf of someone else, right, that's stewardship. That's kind of the language that the New Testament authors use a lot of times, that we're stewards, right? That's what it means to rule on behalf of someone else. If any of you are familiar with Lord of the Rings, Lord Denethor, right, he's stewarding Gondor for Aragorn the king. I just lost some of you there, but I think it's a helpful image of what stewardship is. He's not the real king. He's just stewarding that. He's ruling that kingdom on behalf of the true king. And I think even further, right, if we start to think about, so God commands Adam and Eve and then us to rule his creation, if we start to look at kind of the biblical model of what ruling looks like, it's not this domineering, oppressive ruling, right? We don't have time to jump fully into this and study into this, but I think if we just take a minute to think of the two perhaps greatest rulers in the Bible, who are we going to think of? Probably King David, right? He's probably the greatest king that Israel had. Well, first of all, he was a literal shepherd. And then second of all, Psalm 78 talks about how he shepherded Israel. So he wasn't domineering them. He was shepherding them. He was loving them. And then we think about King Jesus, right? He's the ultimate perfect ruler. And he calls himself the Good Shepherd. So if we can kind of tie those in, right, of stewardship and with David's kingship, and then Jesus is kind of the shepherd king, you can start to see why I said that we have a responsibility to shepherd creation. Because the picture is more than just ruling and domineering over, right? It's this idea of shepherding, of caring for on behalf of someone else. And I think that wording, shepherd creation, gives us kind of the most accurate image of what that part of our image-bearing responsibility means. And then I hope you're starting to see how this ties back into creation being very good, right? Because so humans have intrinsic value, creation is very good, and then us as image bearers means we have an inherent value, and also we have a responsibility to take care of God's good creation. So we're seeing how these all tie together, right? That's why I did a two for one, is because I don't think we can separate these. So we could see as image bearers that we're tasked with caring for God's good creation, then how much more should we care for God's very good creation, right? His people. And the reality is today in our world, those are extremely connected. How we take care of the earth affects people. We're not going to dive into that today, but I think that God's charge that bookends his declaration of image bearing is clear, right? To take care, to shepherd, to steward, and to love his creation, both his good creation of this world and his very good creation of people, right? Of other humans. So the application of that is kind of what I just said, right? The application from God's creation being good and us being image bearers is that we need to let love be genuine. That's from Romans 12. And then we need to care about creation. And I left both of those kind of vague, right? Those are both kind of vague. Say, what does that mean, let love be genuine? What does that mean to care about creation? The reason I left them vague, that was on purpose. I think these are both, there's an infinite amount of ways to do both of these. So I can't really sit here and list out ways to do it. But what my prayer is that the Holy Spirit would stir in us a desire to love genuinely those around us. And what I was challenged as I was preparing this to think about is there someone in my life that I ascribe less value to for any reason? I don't know why. I don't know your life. Maybe there's someone in your life that you ascribe less value to for any reason. The doctrine of creation teaches us that that person has just as much value as the person that's easy to love. And our job as faithful under-shepherds of Christ is to love them genuinely. Maybe that means serving them. Maybe that means hosting them in your home. Maybe that means praying for them, giving to them. Like I said, I don't know. I can't list all the ways we could love them. But I hope that we have eyes to see that every single person in this room, in this city, and on this planet has value. It doesn't matter their political affiliation. It doesn't matter where the home of origin is. It doesn't matter if they have a home. They have value, and our job is to find ways to love them. So that's part one of the application. And then part two is to care about creation. Or I could have said care about creation care. And this is too big, right? It's too vast. But what I hope to communicate and what I hope we can realize is that creation care is not something that's just for liberal environmentalists, right? But it's for every follower of Christ. Paul David Tripp, in his book that we're kind of basing the series on, right, Do You Believe? He talks about a bunch of different doctrines, and that's what we're basing this series on. It's a great book. I'd recommend it. But he says this. He says, environmentalism is not some weird, left-wing, pseudo-pantheistic obsession. No, it is your and my calling. No one should care more about the state of the physical environment, its health, and its flourishing than those of us who believe in the doctrine of creation. Right? That's what it means to be a faithful image bearer of God, is to care about creation care. And I know this can be overwhelming. At least for me, it can seem overwhelming, right? I look at the state of our environment, right, with climate change and ice caps melting and pollution, right, with water and air, and it can feel overwhelming. You say, how can I affect anything on a global scale? I'm just one person. And maybe we can't. Maybe I can't affect anything on a global scale, but I don't think that should change how we steward and how we care for creation. And that doesn't mean we can't change things on a local scale, right? We can change how we care for our backyard. We can change how much we consume and how we consume. And so there's tons of resources out there. If you're interested in creation care, there's 3 books up here. I've actually only read 2 of them. That third one I haven't read, but it's by the same author, so I figure it's pretty good. It's like a textbook. That's why I haven't read it. But I've heard a lot of good things about it. And I did want to say some of the I'm not agreeing with everything that are in these books, but I wanted to throw them up there. One, to hopefully create kind of a culture of reading. I think we need to be readers, and these are 3 great books to read and to carry the conversation. But yeah, hopefully these are just maybe inspire you. Grab one of them and you read it. There's a lot of people who have a lot of stuff to say about creation care. Like I said, it can be very broad and overwhelming, and these books are a helpful starting point. And then Mr. Anderson did, Ken Anderson, I don't know if he was serious or not, but he did offer a reward to anyone who read these. He was giving me comments on this, and he wrote a note, and he said, I'll give a reward to anyone who reads one of these. So if you pick one of these up and read them, go find Ken Anderson, tell him, I don't know, maybe I'll give you $5, maybe $50. I have no idea. That's between you and him. So I just wanted to throw those up there. But again, what I hope to drive in, and what I hope that we take away, is the reality, right, that creation care is a vital aspect of faithfully following Jesus, whatever that looks like, right? So maybe that's a compost pile, maybe that's riding your bike. I don't know what it is, but I think we need to realize that is an aspect of discipleship. So that's for today, right? God created everything out of nothing, and that should lead us to put our hands over our mouth and to rest. And that God's creation is very good, and we are made in his image, which should lead us to love people and to love creation. And I know these are broad, I know these are big, but I hope that we can go home today. And my prayer is that we'd go home with a greater understanding of God, the creator of everything from nothing. And I pray that understanding will lead us to a deeper rest in his power, a deeper love for his created people, and a deeper care for his created world. So I'll come back next week, and we'll do 2 more points of doctrine. We say, well, what about this? Maybe I'm going to cover it next week. So 2 more points and 2 more applications, but I hope we can take that home today. I'm going to pray, and then we got the youth band again with us today, so that'll be a great time to worship. So pray with me. Father Grace, we just come before you humbled by your power, Father, humbled by the reality that you are God and we are not. Father, I pray that is not something we just realize in this moment and forget about as we walk out these doors. But Father, I pray that truth that you created everything out of nothing, I pray that would affect us today and tomorrow and for the rest of our lives, Father. Would we rest in your goodness and in your grace and in your greatness? And Father, I do pray that you would give us a genuine care and love for the people around us and for the world around us. Father, would we see you as creator and as Lord of all, and would that lead us to greater praise and worship of you? It's in Christ's powerful name that we pray this morning. Amen.